Okay, hello. Welcome to my podcast. I have a question in English and bir sorum var in Turkish. This is season 6 of my podcast and I have a guest here with me, Alexander Kirill. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm pronouncing correctly.
No, you pronounce it perfectly.
Okay, thank you. Welcome, Alexander. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you so much. We are going to talk with Alexander around a question, this episode's questions. A question, what is Arbeitsblut? Mm-hmm. Okay, I studied this word since a week. Again, I'm not sure if I pronounced correctly.
We can work on that one a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. I should study about that. It means happiness at work. We will talk about this word as well during the episode. I will give a brief introduction and then I will pass the microphone to Alexander. Alexander Kirill is Chief Happiness Officer at Boohoo. Mm-hmm. I met with him online so many years ago. I met with you first when I watched your TEDx talk. I think it was around 2015 or so. When was it?
Maybe 12 or something. I'm not even sure. Okay. It was a while back.
Yes. I first met you while I watched that TEDx talk and I'm impressed with this work by that time. And then I connected with you on social media. Alexander wrote 5 books and I have read 2 of them. Let me tell you about those 2 of them that I read. Happy Hour is 9 to 5, which is translated into Turkish as well. Mm-hmm. I read it in Turkish. And it gives detailed and practical information about how to be happy at work and together with happiness, how to be successful. And it is supported with lots of data and experiments and details. Apart from that, I read Leading with Happiness. That's a great book too. It's for mostly managers and leaders. And I loved one sentence from the cover of the book. Alexander, if you let me, I want to read it.
Sure.
It says, how the best leaders put happiness first to create phenomenal business results and a better world. The first part is very good, but I loved a better world part.
Yeah.
Because I always believe in our small communities, even if it's households, even if it is our workplace, we somehow affect the world. So I love this part, this introduction part. So thanks about
that's
it.
That's great to hear. Me too. And I honestly believe business should be a force for good in the world. There's no way we can create a better world if all of our companies are going in the opposite direction.
Exactly. So thanks for stating that in front of your book. Then how my story with Alexander went. Recently, we went to Denmark for some personal reasons. And then I contacted with Alexander there. Then we met online and I invited him to my podcast and he accepted. So this brought us to today. Now I'm passing the microphone to Alexander because I like to listen the story of the people from their mouth because we cannot tell their story as they do. So Alexander, tell us about yourself, please.
Oh, sure. I make people happy at work. I've been doing that since 2003, so for 20 years now. Because I believe that, you know, that's just a fact of modern society. Everybody has to work, right? Unless you have very, very rich parents, you will have to spend a lot of your life working. And I believe that that time should be something you actually enjoy. Now, I know a lot of people hate their jobs. I had a job once that I hated. It was the worst time of my life. but we can actually create good workplaces where people actually like working. And if we do that, that is good for the, obviously good for the employees, good for people. It's also good for the bottom line. And as you said, it helps create a better world. So that's what I've been doing for the last 20 years. I do talks and workshops for companies around the world. I have spoken in over 50 different countries. I've been to Turkey 5 times, I believe, to speak. And I've been to every continent except Antarctica. I still want to do, I'm hoping some South Pole researchers will invite me to do a talk at the South Pole so I can go to Antarctica and speak. so I can say I've been to every continent. Because I honestly just believe that how you feel about your job really affects you, and you should have everybody should have a job they like. That's really the core of it.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I totally agree with you. I always say, if as HR people or managers, if we could keep the people's spirit when they first started the work, the first day spirit, if we can make it live longer, that would be great. But sometimes it's lost somewhere during time.
Oh, absolutely. There's you have a new applicant and you tell them how great the workplace is, and then they start working and they're super excited, and then they find out it's not so great.
Those were the advertisement, but it is over now.
Exactly. Now, welcome to reality.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Unfortunately, I know you were a tech person. You were a computer scientist, but you changed your route to move to a different area. I have a question about that. What made you move towards a new way? What was your why in moving to that new road?
Yeah, so I was in tech before, first as a consultant and then as a co-founder of a tech company here in Copenhagen, which we ran for 5 years, and then we sold it. This is way back in 2002. And at that point, I asked myself, okay, so now what do I want to do with my life, right? We created this company. It was a good workplace. Then we sold it. Now what do we do? Now what do I do with my life? And I was like, you know what? Tech is great, but I was really passionate about happiness at work. And then I was just like, let me do that instead. And I did, and I had no idea if it would work. I had no idea if I could build a business around this. But I knew that I was so passionate about this topic, about this mission, that I would rather do it and fail than not do it. Of course, I ended up doing it and succeeding, which was even better, right? But yes. For me, I was just gripped by this idea that, you know, nobody was talking at the time. These days, a lot of people talk about happiness at work, and I think it's fantastic. It's become much more a part of the conversation. But back then, it was really not on the radar. So in most businesses, I was like, somebody should do something about that. And I decided to do it. And here we are.
It's great that you choose this way. Okay. Again, that word, I it's hard to pronounce for me. Happiness at work, arbejdsglæde, something like that. You will say it and we will hear it.
Yeah. So Danish is a very, very weird language and super hard to pronounce. So in Danish, arbejde means work. It's like German Arbeit. Mm-hmm. And glæde means happiness. So glæde, which is a little really weird.
Yeah,
it's just like word. it's like gladness, being okay. Glad, right? The same root. So arbejdsglæde is in the Danish dictionary and just means like liking your job, being happy at work. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about that word is, of course, that only the Scandinavian languages have a word for it. Danish, Swedish, and Norwegian are very similar. We all have that word, but there's no similar word in English or in French or in Spanish or in Turkish or in Chinese for actually liking your job. Yeah, so it's a good word to have, arbejdsglæde.
Yeah, it's a great word to have. It's a very important word to have. I don't know, maybe I heard from one of your talks, people spend most of their time at work after sleep. They do spend most of their time at work. So it's important word to have, happiness at work. Do you think there's a connection between your country and Norway and Sweden are one of the most happy countries in the world, according to United Nations research? Is there any connection with that?
Definitely. I mean, it's you're right that when they do these happiness studies in different countries, the Nordic countries are usually at the top. For the last few years, it's been Finland. Denmark, my country, used to be number one, and now we're only two or three. It sucks. I'm so sad. they're all in the top. They're all very good. Part of that is definitely that people also like their jobs, that companies treat them well, that people don't work like 100 hours a week. We have we have the lowest working hours in the world. I think that's fantastic. That companies actually care about their employees, and that employees expect to be happy at work. That's why we have this word, right? Because it shows that it's just part of our culture. As a Dane, when you get a job, you expect it to be a good job. That's the most natural thing in the world.
Okay.
In other countries, people kind of expect the opposite. A lot of Americans expect work to suck. It's like, I hate my job. That's just natural. That's just the way it is. And there's a very different attitude in the Nordic countries. And that's definitely part of why we're so happy in life as well.
Mm-hmm. There was a funny saying around Turkey. People say if working is good, they wouldn't give you money in return.
Yeah, exactly. Or I've heard some Americans say that if you enjoy your job, you're not working hard enough. I was like, what? It makes no sense. Makes no sense.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, but then before a while you said a similar thing. You said happiness was not pronounced a lot when you first started working on this subject.
Yeah.
When I started working in HR maybe 30 plus years ago, I don't say the exact period in order to keep my age as a secret. In those days, we were just talking about satisfaction and we were trying to measure satisfaction levels of employees, if they are satisfied with their salary, with the meal we provide, with the transfer options, whatever.
Yeah.
Then we understand that it's not enough. We move to another concept. This is like a timeline for the happiness. We move to engagement.
Yeah.
It's good to engage with the team, with the work, with the company. But at the end, we started to talk about burnout.
Mm-hmm.
Then we changed the word to happiness. Now it's changing happiness and well-being. How do you see this timeline if you look at it?
Yeah, that's I've seen the same development. So these are all useful concepts. I obviously think happiness is the most useful, and I'll explain why. So, and I can give you, I mean, these are all hard to define, right? But I can give you how I define them and how I see the difference. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, satisfaction is like, it's like more of a rational intellectual decision of how satisfied you are with all of the situations in your job, right? All of the circumstances, so like your salary, your working hours, your commute, how you're treated, your tasks, everything around that. And you sort of look at that and you decide, you know, bonuses, pension plans, perks and all of that. And you look at all of these factors, like the pros and cons, and you rationally, intellectually, logically decide if you're satisfied.
Visibles and touchables, I think.
Sorry?
Visibles and touchables.
Yeah, definitely. But I think it turns out that job satisfaction is very much affected by the more measurable things, like salary and commute and that kind of thing. And so it's very logical, it's very rational. It's a thought-driven process, in my opinion. In my opinion, job satisfaction is what you think about your job.
Mm-hmm.
And also what we know about job satisfaction is that it's very much driven by comparison.
No.
Your satisfaction is never determined by your salary as an absolute number. It's always the salary compared to what you think other people are getting. Maybe your coworkers in similar jobs or people with the same education or whatever. So it's very much, it's logical, it's rational, and it's very much a matter of comparison. You know, you could be perfectly satisfied with this salary until you find out that your coworker is getting more. And they're like, oh my God, I hate this. And and people become very like frustrated. So that's how I see job satisfaction. Then engagement is interesting. And I think it's a better concept than job satisfaction. So for me, engagement is how much do you care about your job? How engaged are you? Do you do extra work voluntarily? Do you go out and seek new knowledge voluntarily so you can do a better job? Do you actually genuinely care about doing your job well? But the problem with, in my opinion, with engagement is that you can be engaged at work without being happy. Let's say that your boss is an asshole and being very demanding, or you're fired. That will cause you to be very engaged at work. But are you happy? No. And that level of high engagement and low happiness can absolutely lead to burnout. There was an article in the Harvard Business Review a few years ago that looked at people with high engagement but low happiness, and those people are much more likely to burn out. So that's my I like the concept of engagement, but engagement alone is not enough, because high engagement and low happiness leads to frustration and burnout and stress. Does that make sense?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And then we have happiness. And for me, happiness at work is how you feel about your job, right? Job satisfaction is what you think about your job. Happiness work is like on a perfectly normal work day when you're at your desk doing your job or you're in a meeting or talking to coworkers or whatever, how do you typically feel? And of course, emotions change, right? Some days you feel great, some days you don't feel good. So in the same day, you can have moments where you feel amazing about your job and moments where you don't. That's perfectly normal. So the question is, overall, do you feel good about your job or do you mostly feel bad about your job? So this is very emotional. Does your job make you feel, you know, are you proud of the work you do? Are you interested and curious to learn new things? Do you feel accepted and appreciated by your coworkers? Do you feel like the work you do is meaningful and makes a positive difference? Or do you spend a lot of the workday feeling like ashamed, angry, afraid, stressed, frustrated, or like you're being mistreated? That's really the question here. And that turns out, in my opinion, to be the most useful concept. Because all of the, here's the interesting thing, all of the positive effects we'd like in the workplace turn out to be driven more by your emotional state than by your job satisfaction, right? By your happiness than your job satisfaction. I think the best book on this, in my opinion, is The Progress Principle. I can see it on my bookshelf right there. Mm-hmm. The Progress Principle by Teresa M. Abelly, where she talks about the research she did, and she found that when people feel good at work, they're more productive, more creative, they work better with others, they communicate better, they feel better, and so on. So this is why the most important thing, most important concept, in my opinion, is happiness. Because happiness drives the business results we want, more productivity, more creativity, more innovation, and so on. And then the latest development, as you say, is well-being. Mm-hmm. And again, how I see it is that this is when you expand happiness and you also start talking about like physical well-being, like exercise, yoga classes, that kind of thing. And I am honestly not crazy about that. I have nothing as such against it, but I see a little too much that companies are like, our employees are not happy. Let's give them some meditation classes or some, you know, mindfulness and well-being classes, or we give them some yoga or whatever. Those things are nice, but they're not what make us happy at work. And if something is broken in the workplace, if the employees are happy, well-being initiatives like yoga classes or meditation or that kind of thing are they're not going to fix it. In fact, in many cases, they're going to make it worse, because people are like, listen, our bosses are toxic managers. They treat us like dirt, and now they want to give us a yoga class. And people are like, why won't they fix the real problem? So that's my problem with a lot of the well-being initiatives. And it's become very popular. Companies spend a lot of time and money on it. And in my opinion, very, very often, it doesn't work. Yeah. If you have a great workplace already, if employees are happy at work and you offer them yoga classes, then it's a great thing. Then I'm all for it. But if you do it as an alibi instead of fixing the real problems in the workplace, then I think well-being initiatives are a distraction quite often. So that's only how I define it. There are many, many different, that's also the problem with a lot of these concepts, is that they have many different definitions. Like I was looking at the definition of engagement and I found 10 different definitions.
Yes.
So it's super hard to define these concepts. That's how I define them. And that's why I honestly think that happiness is the most important of these concepts.
I feel very good about it, because I'm almost at the same page with you in those definitions. And I totally agree with you with that well-being participants. Apart from that, I hear a lot of things here in Turkey. People say our employees are not happy. We want to make a social event. We made it, but nobody came. We made it, they came, but they didn't talk with the managers. Okay, I say, you exactly. are spending money for nothing. Don't spend that money. Just fix the things and then go on for social events. So I totally agree with you on this, but it's hard to make people convinced about it. I don't know why. Maybe it's easier to spend money and try to buy happiness. And maybe that's the reason the word happiness becomes a little bit dirty around the world. It's fixed with money, monetary things, but it is not so.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. The big trend in the US right now is pizza parties, where, you know, the company's like, our employees are not motivated. And then they throw them a pizza party and there's like three Domino's pizzas and they suck and the man and managers don't even show up. And honestly, this actually makes employees more frustrated. They're yes. like, they're not even paying us well. And now they just give us pizza and they think that's going to fix it.
Yes.
And here's the thing. So here's the thing. All of these things that companies try to do, like the yoga classes or all of that, those things can cost a lot of money and take a lot of time and they don't work.
Yeah.
Whereas the things that actually make us happy at work don't necessarily cost a lot of money. They can be done on any budget. They don't necessarily take a lot of time. But it requires an actual understanding of what happiness at work is and the science behind it. And if companies and HR people don't have that understanding, then they're just going to keep wasting time and money on the wrong things. And that's when you get into those, you know, we gave our employees this, we gave them that, we gave them this, we gave them that, and they're still not happy. What's wrong with the people? There's nothing wrong with people. There's wrong, something very wrong with your understanding of human psychology and the science behind it.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with you on this point. I hope people will somehow see about it. The same way, then it will be.
Yeah. And we've had some success in educating people around this and working with companies and working with HR and working with management to make them understand that, you know, this is all the stuff you've been doing. It's not working. Here's what you could do instead. And here are some ways to do it. And this will actually work. And the cool thing is when companies do this, they actually see results very quickly. You can very, very quickly start to create an improvement in how people feel about their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, that more than anything else. And then, of course, from there, an improvement in like in productivity and efficiency. Specifically, we worked with an IKEA warehouse here in Copenhagen. Mm-hmm. And they were like, they saw instant improvement in things like customer satisfaction, employee turnover, absenteeism, and so on. It was it's fun to see when it works, and it does work.
Great. It is, but this goes to what you always say. Happiness is not something like feel good thing. It is it has something to do with the business results. I think totally supports that.
Absolutely. I mean, and there's so much research that shows that when people are happy at work, they do a better job in so many ways. And of course, when people are unhappy at work, it hurts business results in so many different ways. Yeah. Including stuff like employee turnover, right? If you know, if people hate their jobs, they leave. There's no, you know, no mystery.
Yeah. Most of the research findings support that people don't leave their job because of their salaries. They do leave their jobs because of the relationships, bad relationships, toxic management.
Exactly.
This is a fact. And you talk about toxic management a lot. I see your videos. It's crucial.
So I have a YouTube channel where I make videos about happiness at work. And I decided to make a video about bad bosses.
Yeah.
And I started writing the script, and suddenly the script was 30 pages. And the video ended up being almost an hour and a half long. So apparently I had something in some things I needed to say about bad bosses, and bad bosses are terrible. That's one of the key things a company can do to be a better workplace is to find and handle all the bad bosses, because they ruin it for everybody. Ultimately, bad bosses can kill people.
Yes.
There's a scary study from Sweden that shows that if you work for a bad boss, you have an increased risk of being hospitalized with heart disease or even dying from heart disease.
Yeah.
That is just scary as hell.
Certainly. It's important. I think the companies should think deeply when promoting a person to a manager role. It is not just technical proficiency that makes someone manager. In reverse, there are other skills that should be dominant, but they miss it. They take the best person in the company doing that technical job. Now you are responsible for this 20 people.
Then, exactly.
Oh, then your script comes alive.
Classic mistake. And again, you have to remember, as a manager, you don't lead machines, you don't lead computers, you don't lead spreadsheets, you don't lead projects, you lead people. And you need to be good with people. This is something most managers can learn. But it's just so much easier if the company promotes people to management position who actually are good with other human beings. I always say you shouldn't lead people if you don't like people.
Yes.
You have an actual interest in the well-being of the people you lead. And there are so many great examples of that. One of my favorite business books is Everybody Matters by Bob Chapman, who's the CEO of Barry Waymiller, a big company in the US. Fantastic book. And there he talks specifically about this kind of leadership where where you're not leading for your own sake. You have the privilege of leading people, and you want to lead them in the way that makes their lives and their work lives better.
Yeah, exactly. I have a question. In positive psychology, most people say happiness is a choice.
Yeah,
it's a personal choice. And Sonia Lyubomirsky supports it with her findings. She says there is genetic history, there is the life conditions, but there is a huge part which belongs to the people's perception about what's going on. Is this the case in work life, or is there any other component? Is it just a choice of people, employees, or any other thing?
So I say it, I've seen that research, and it's great. It's good research. I say it a little bit differently. I always say that happiness begins with a choice. And the same thing goes for happiness at work. The reason I'm not crazy about this saying that, happiness is a choice is that it sounds like it doesn't matter what your circumstances are. You could always just choose to be happy. And that's just not true. I mean, if you work in a toxic workplace, you're being bullied by your coworkers, your boss is a major jerk, you're working 100 hours a week. If you're in that situation, you can't just choose to be happy. In fact, I would argue you shouldn't choose to be happy. What you should choose to do is get out of there and go to a workplace where they will actually treat you well. And that's why I say it begins with a choice, right? So what you could say, I want to be happy at work. You can make that choice. That won't make you happy, but it can make you take actions towards becoming happy at work. For instance, leaving that job and finding a better one where they don't treat you like dirt. So yes, and the reason why I say that happiness at work starts with a choice is that a lot of people have not made that choice. For a lot of people, they hate their jobs, but they just accept it because they think that's natural. They think that's it's the same for everybody. They think all workplaces are bad. All bosses are jerks, all work is stressful. And that's just not true. There are many great bosses out there. There are many good workplaces out there. And if you make the choice to say, I want to be happy at work, then you can make it happen. But if you don't make that choice, then you're just going to sit there and accept whatever happens to you. No matter how bad the workplace is, you're just going to be like, yeah, I guess it's bad, but it's bad everywhere. And that's the choice we want to make people aware of.
And if that's the case, the toxic word comes in front of the employee. They become toxic employees. They don't like their job. They hate to be there. They started to talk. They started to make some gossips. Then they make some dirt and dust within the company. So
There's some very, very interesting research on that, including there's a study from Florida State University that found that, even like your star employees, like your best employees, if they become frustrated and unhappy at work, they will engage in negative behavior like gossiping, rumors, bullying, even things like unethical things like cheating, stealing, manipulating, and that kind of thing. So absolutely yes. We are, no human exists in isolation. We are very much affected by the circumstances we find ourselves in, and if we find ourselves in a toxic organization, then toxic behavior becomes normalized. It's something everybody does. The worst example of that is probably Enron. If you remember the huge Enron scandal in the 90s. And inside this organization, like lying, cheating, manipulating energy prices. They sold energy, and if they caused like a blackout somewhere in the US, they could actually raise the price of energy and make more money. So they did that on purpose. And that became normalized inside the organization. In fact, the traders who did that were rewarded and got bonuses and Ferraris because they sold more and they made more money for the company, until the whole thing collapsed and the CEO ended up going to jail. It's a really scary example of how bad behavior becomes normalized inside a toxic organization.
Yeah. It came like a surprise to the world when it was on the news, but it wasn't a surprise, actually.
No, until the news broke, they were actually held up as like an example of a good workplace.
Yes.
I remember their values were respect, integrity, excellence, and communication.
Yeah. I love especially the integrity one.
Integrity was a value. It's amazing. It's amazing.
It's funny, but we see those things. But you saw lots of countries, you've been in lots of different cultures.
Yeah.
What do you see as the perception of happiness in different cultures, the most amazing ones?
So here's the interesting thing, is that it's very easy to focus on the cultural differences, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've spoken in China, in the Middle East, in Africa, in Latin America, the US, all over Europe. And it's very easy to focus on the differences, but here's where we're all the same. Everybody wants to be happy. That's like a fundamental human driver. It's something we all want. And this is not something I came up with. This goes all the way back to Aristotle,
mm-hmm.
Or Epicurus, who made the observation that that's what we all just really want. We just want a life where we can be happy and enjoy ourselves and make other people happy. This is the same across all cultures. In many cultures, people just haven't realized that it's possible to be happy at work. A lot of people just focus on being happy in life. I gave a speech at a bank in South Africa, and a lady came up, one of these bank employees came up after my talk and said that she just never realized that it was actually possible to have a job you enjoy. She thought, you know, work sucks. That's just the way it is. And here's the other interesting thing. When you look at what it is that makes people happy at work, this is the same across all cultures. In all my workshops and talks, I do this exercise where I ask people, so tell me about a situation where you were happy at work. And it's the same things that come up. It's the same two factors that make people happy at work. And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, in a bank in Kuwait where all the women are in burqas, you can only see their eyes, or if it's like an advertising agency in the US, or it's a tech company in Eastern Europe. It's the same things that make us happy at work. It can be expressed very differently, but it's like the same two factors that people need to be happy at work, which is that is super interesting.
Yeah. And I love those two factors, results and relationships. Am I right?
That's what we need. That's what makes us happy at work. Doing great work that we can be proud of, that is meaningful, together with great people that appreciate us, who appreciate us for who we are.
Yeah.
If we have that, we're happy at work. If we don't, we're miserable.
Yeah. And our listeners maybe think about those two factors. How do they feel about those two factors? And then measure their own happiness at work. It's quite easy, I think.
It really helps focus focus on the right things.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we should ignore things like salaries and compensation. Those things absolutely need to be fair. If they're unfair, they can make us miserable and frustrated. That's how it should be. But once those things are fair, what we need to focus on is results and relationships. How do we create workplaces where people can do great work together with great people?
Yeah, great. Probably you may face with this, but I face it a lot when I visit some clients who want to take consultancy about HR related issues. In our first visit, they say we want happy employees, we want to make our employees happy. But as you move on, you see that they put in the front line the business and the profits, and even though they say people comes first, it's not the case.
Yeah.
So there is lots of confusion within the companies. What do you observe about it?
So I see the same thing. And I think what really helps is to, first of all, show them the research, show them the science that says that if your employees are happy, it's going to save your company so much money. And you can look at try looking at their specific pain points. Maybe they have high employee turnover. Maybe they have low customer satisfaction. Maybe they have low quality in their products. Maybe they have, very little motivation or engagement in daily work life. Maybe they don't see a lot of creativity and innovation. Maybe they find it hard to complete their projects. I don't know. But if you can find out what their specific pain points are, then it's very easy to find research that shows that, well, if your employees were happier, all of this would be much less of a problem. And there are so many great research on the benefits of happy employees. That's definitely one thing. And then you can also show them good examples. And there are so many great examples out there of companies in every kind of industry that decided to put their employees first. I mentioned Barry Waymiller and the book Everybody Matters by Bob Chapman is a fantastic example. Southwest Airlines, maybe not so much today. I think their culture is changing a little bit, but until about 10 years ago, they absolutely put their employees first, and they got great. This is the most profitable airline in the world. They have 50,000 employees. And a good example from them is that right after 9/11, 2001, when people stopped flying, all the other airlines in the US had huge layoffs, like huge layoffs. 10, 15, 20% of the staff were fired. But Southwest Airlines had no layoffs, not a single person. Because they were like, our employees come first. They're very clear about that. And the result was that Southwest Airlines was the airline that recovered the quickest from 9/11. And again, it showed their employees that this company doesn't just say they care, they actually do care. So there are so many great examples of companies that do that. And I think it helps businesses if you can show them those examples. Maybe even examples from their own industry or their own country, and say, here's a company that does that. One of my favorite examples right now is a tech company in Serbia called Vega IT. And they've done this. The company's now 15 years old. It grew from like a handful of people to now 500 people. Insanely successful. And they've created such a great culture by putting their employees first. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, walking the talk.
Exactly. Instead of the whole, our employees are our number one asset. And then as soon as there's any kind of crisis in the organization, you lay off 10% of the staff. That's just that you say one thing and then you do something else. That just shows employees that you cannot be trusted.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
totally agree. But we see that those bad examples a lot all over the world, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's the thing. About negativity bias. Negativity
Yes.
bias means that, negative stories just spread faster. And what we often forget is that for every negative story, there might be five really good ones that we have
Yeah.
never heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it must be our duty to spread those five examples more and more and more around us.
I see that very much as part of my work. Because the good examples show people what is possible, that this is not just, a fancy talk. No, this is can actually it can be done. It has been done. And when you do it, it works really well.
Yes.
And it creates, happier employees and a much more successful business.
Yeah, and that will build the hope for the future of work, I'm sure, if we do so.
Exactly.
As being said, hope and future, I would like to ask you, how do you see the future of happiness at work concept? How is it going to evolve? Are we going to keep the same word? How do you see the future?
So I think this trend is it can't be stopped. Like
Good
I
to
said,
hear.
yeah.
Good to
Oh no,
hear.
it's here to stay. It's here to stay. Get used to it. 20 years ago, there wasn't that much focus on it. Now there are a lot of companies talking about it. I think that's fantastic. That's definitely going to continue. And what I also see that it's that is amazing is that the young people coming into the workplaces, they're much more focused on this. The previous generation, I'm a Generation Xer, and the boomers, they were like, you know, I just want a career. I just want to make some money. If I have to work 60 or 70 hours a week, I guess that's just the way it has to be. But then the next generations, the millennials, and now the younger generations, they don't put up with that kind of crap. They want reasonable working hours. They want to be treated well. They want meaningful work. They want to make a positive difference. They want to be trained. They want fair compensation. And if you can't give them that, they're going to quit. Yes. They don't have that same barrier against quitting that older people have. And I think that's amazing. And of course, a lot of companies are like, oh my God, young people don't want to work, or young people are so spoiled. No, young people are amazing. It's the older generations that are messed up.
Yes.
And will just accept any kind of mistreatment at work. And you cannot get away with that with the young employees. That's another reason why companies will have to get better at this, or they will not be able to attract any employee under the age of 50. Very, very soon. I think that's amazing. There's the rise of the anti-work movement in the US. They're like, they're not against work as such, they're against bad work. And they have like millions of people following this movement. And they're not afraid to quit if they feel like they're being mistreated at work.
Yeah.
So there's no way around this. Also because two competing companies in the same industry, and one company is happy and the other one is miserable, the happy one is going to outcompete the miserable one over time, right? Because they can attract the best employees. They'll become more creative, more innovative. They'll have more satisfied customers. They'll have lower employee turnover. They'll have lower absenteeism, and that they'll make more money. They can attract better investments, and that way they'll outcompete the unhappy competitors. So there's really no way. Happiness at work is here to stay. Sorry to say it, but that's just the way it is.
That's great news to hear.
This
reminded me, I'm sure you know it, Bhutan measures gross national happiness.
Exactly.
I am an economist originally, and we learned about gross national product a lot to measure the wealth of the countries, but they are measuring gross national happiness because it brings the money together with it. Maybe companies will somehow in the future, as you said, move towards measuring happiness to see their profits or profitability levels.
And there is definitely a huge movement in that direction as well. In fact, I helped create a tool for measuring happiness at work. It's called Heart Count.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I heard it. Can you tell us about it a bit?
Oh, yeah, just very briefly. I got tired of, you know, again, I think job satisfaction is a less interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm a little sad about the fact that every company does an annual job satisfaction survey. And in my opinion, those are usually a waste of time and money, and everybody hates doing them.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, once a year, you get like 100 questions in this survey, and it takes forever to fill out, and half the questions are meaningless. And then nothing happens at the end. And then nothing happens, right? You spend all this time filling it out and nothing happens.
Yes.
So we were like, can we do this better? And then I came up with the idea that let's do a weekly survey with three questions.
Okay.
Just three questions. So it's like click, 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 submit, boom, you're done. And then, which is cool, you have instant data.
Mm-hmm.
Right after you filled it out, you can see the data for your team, and management can see data for the whole organization and can actually act on it.
Great.
So it's instant data, it's meaningful questions, it actually measures happiness at work and not job satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's suddenly a problem in one team or a problem with one manager, then management can instantly see it and do something about it right away. That's really, really cool. It's called Heart Count. That's heart as in the muscle, not hard as in difficult. And the reason we call it Heart Count is because every organization knows its head count.
Yes.
That's how many people work there, right? Do you know where the term head count comes from?
No. Actually, I know, I heard, listened from you, but
okay,
I think
you know.
our listeners do not know. So please share it. It's interesting because
cattle. If you're an American cattle rancher, cattle farmer, your head count is how many heads of cattle do you own? And now we use it for people in our workplaces. I think that's a little demeaning. So we
it's
call
so
it heart, So we call it heart count instead, like how many people have their heart in their jobs. And so we say the head count is how many people are in your organization, and your heart count is how many of them actually want to be there.
This is great.
And the companies who are using it find it incredibly useful, and employees even like it, because now they can give their honest opinion. And if they do, something happens. If you point out a problem, you get an answer like this. You get some kind of reply, some kind of action almost instantly, which
that's
is
the critical part.
Useful.
Yeah. Great innovation.
Thank you.
And do you see any challenges or obstacles for moving that nice vision of the future about happiness at work, or how we can overcome those obstacles?
Yeah, I think the main obstacle right now is management in many organizations, right?
Yes.
There are many organizations out there who do not believe in this happiness crap. They're like, business is business, and it's all about money, and as long as I get my bonus, everything is fine. And people shouldn't expect to be happy at work. They should just work 60-70 hours a week. That's the main obstacle. And the good thing is those dinosaurs are slowly dying, they're retiring.
Yes.
And the next generations have a different attitude, and I think that's amazing. That is absolutely the main challenge to this movement. And that's why I also, you know, when I go out and I present to companies what we do, there are some companies that just don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, no, I don't see the point. And I honestly waste very little time trying to convince them.
Yeah.
Because I would rather work with the companies that do get it, because I could, you know, I could break my heart trying to convince people who don't want to be convinced. It's never going to work anyway.
Yes.
They're too stuck in their ways. So instead, what I do is I work with the companies that do get it, that do want to be better, and I help them become better and outcompete the dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
Another huge problem right now is business schools.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a degree in economics.
Yes.
If anybody has taken any kind of degree in business, like an MBA or something, you'll know that this happiness does not show up in a lot of places.
Yes.
In most business schools, it's just not on the agenda.
Unfortunately,
I took a class once in business strategy, and I was like, because I have no degree in business. I was like, I should learn something. So I took a class in business strategy, and the whole class, all of it, was focused on creating competitive advantage and increasing profits.
Yeah.
There was nothing in there about culture, people, customers, having a positive effect in society, CSR. None of that. If you have a boss who has an MBA, that's probably what they've learned.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it's all about business. It's all about the bottom line. This goes all the way back to this article that Milton Friedman wrote in the 1970s on shareholder value, that the only responsibility of management is to increase shareholder value. And of course, later economists have said that this is the most damaging and the stupidest idea in business, that companies should only focus on increasing profits for the shareholders. That's an idiotic idea. And ironically, it leads to lower profits. If you actually run a good workplace that people like working for, then you'll have higher profits.
But as you said, management is the biggest obstacle. Then they can be the biggest facilitator as well on the opposite side.
Yes. I mean, if you want to create a happy workplace, you'll need top management on board.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to spread it to the whole workplace, there you can do a lot, like in local teams. Like if the local department head of this team wants to create a good, create a happy team, you can absolutely do a lot locally. And I've seen great examples of that. But if you want like the whole organization of hundreds or thousands of people to be happy, then you need top management on board. It's not going to happen without them. My favorite example is a pension company here in Copenhagen, where the CEO was like, you know what? The only way we can create growth and better profits is if our employees are happy.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, boom, there we go. And he started like an internal process inside the organization, and it worked so well. But it absolutely requires top leadership to be on board with it and active participants in the process.
Okay. What are the basic three things, for example? I love saying three things. Three things should that management have, what or should focus on? What are the basic three? No,
yeah.
You can make it more or less.
Yeah,
just
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Three.
So, yeah. So what I see work really well is put somebody in charge of the happiness project. This is what we call the chief happiness officer, right? It doesn't have to be that exact title, and it doesn't have to be a full-time job. At this pension company I just mentioned, it was the leader, the project leader of the happiness project was a wonderful lady called Helene, who was also the head of legal inside the organization. Yeah, yeah. But she was very passionate about happiness at work. So they said, you're now the project manager. You are in charge of this. And she worked directly with the CEO and kept him updated on what they were doing. So I think that's really, really good. So have somebody in charge. I mean, every time something is important inside the organization, somebody is in charge of it, right?
Yeah.
If the money is important, we have a chief financial officer.
Yes.
If, you know, if the technology is important, we have a CTO and so on. So we need a chief happiness officer. Second thing is have a plan. And I think it's super important that we have like a specific long-term plan. I think you should plan ahead at least 6 months. So it just so the initiatives aren't just sporadic, like, okay, we'll have like a social gathering here, and then we'll have a party here, and then we'll have like a yoga class here. Right. And that's what I see in a lot of companies, is that they try things, but it's very random.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to see like a specific plan.
Okay.
So you can see the development and that, and like the whole plan makes sense. And then I think the third very important thing is to measure the impact.
Mm-hmm.
Measure the impact on the employees, measure employee happiness using heart count, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Measure employee impact, but also measure the impact on relevant business parameters. Can you measure employee turnover? Can you measure absenteeism? Can you measure customer satisfaction? Because that will show you that it's not just working for the employees, it's also having an effect on our bottom line.
Yes.
And if you do those three things, then you're really set. And that's what we've seen them do in all of the cases where it's really, really worked.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
also say, you know, do something,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, you can't just talk about happiness at work. You need to do something to create better workplaces, obviously focused on results and relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't do something, it's not going to work. That's it's sad, but it's true, right? You got to do
yes.
something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you need to have a plan. So,
yeah.
So you're actually doing stuff focused on results and relationships. Yeah, I think those are the that's the optimal attack plan
yeah.
of attack.
Yeah. I mostly like the somebody in charge thing, because usually this is given to HR, HR's responsibility. It is somewhere in between many duties to be done. So
yeah.
Somehow it is lost. Somehow it is tried to be done by meditation classes and it doesn't work. But someone in charge of this as a whole, that would make a difference, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody in HR has the passion and the time to do it well, then that could absolutely
That's
work.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's super interesting that in all the cases where I've seen it really work the best, it's been somebody else.
Yeah.
Probably because HR is already bogged down in, you know, hirings and contracts
yes.
and legal stuff and salaries
yeah.
and
yeah.
trainings and all of that, you know, onboarding and that kind of thing. I think it's a little sad that in many cases HR is becoming so process focused
yes.
and sort of losing focus on the people, on the humans, the
yeah.
human part of the human resources. I think that's a little sad, but it happens in many organizations. Yeah, I think the most important thing when picking a chief happiness officer is that it's somebody with a passion.
Yeah.
Passion
yeah.
for creating a better workplace.
Yeah, that passion is critical. And also
Absolutely.
for some HR people, they're already unhappy. So how can they create a happiness environment within the workplace?
That is sadly very true. Sadly
yeah.
very true.
Yeah. Okay, while coming to the end of our time, I can ask you so many questions because you have so many answers for all of them. But I want to make up a new question, a
sure.
final question. Let's together dream the future.
Yeah.
This question came into my mind right now. And let's assume that all the companies are convinced with the happy workplace idea, and all the companies are happy.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of difference will it make to the world?
Oh my God, it would be amazing. So first of all, what would happen was that it would affect employees incredibly positively, right? Because instead of so many people coming home from work tired and stressed and frustrated with no energy for anything, people would come home from work fired up and energetic and feeling good. And that would affect not just their work life, but also their private lives. So when you're happy at work, you have more energy to be a good parent, a good spouse or partner. You have more energy to go play with your dog, more energy to go exercise, more energy to go do something good, like work for a charity, and make a positive difference in your local community. So it would have so many ripple effects, not just at work, in the workplace, but also outside of the workplaces. Another thing that would happen is that our workplaces would go, the businesses, our companies would go from being primarily focused on profits. And, you know, if we can sacrifice our employees, if we can sacrifice the environment, if we can sacrifice the local communities and make a little more money, we're going to do that. Those companies would instead say, how can we make money, but at the same time be a force for good in the world? And companies would use their energy and use their profits to address the problems we have, like poverty, social inequality, global warming, global climate disaster, problems like pollution, problems like, the increasing problems we have with democracy and the rise of right-wing fascism. Companies would use their, let's say, their power to address some of those problems, see where can we make it better. And I see a lot of that happening already. I mentioned the IT company in Serbia. Their vision is actually to create a happy and successful business and use our success to create a better world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is beautiful.
Great.
And that is what we would see, that all of business would become a force for good in the world instead of what it is today, which is just a force for making a few very rich people even richer. And I think that would honestly be amazing. There are so many companies doing this already. But if every workplace did this, it would change the world.
I agree. As I asked the question, that came into my eyesight, and it looked wonderful. It really looked wonderful.
It wouldn't be paradise. I mean, no workplace is perfect. But it would be so much better than what we have today. And instead of, so right now, whenever we try to make something better in society, we often have to fight against corporate interests.
Yes.
I think a good example is in the 70s, they wanted to outlaw lead additives in car fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, lead is just bad. It has so many bad effects. And of course, corporate industries, corporate lobbyists fought so hard to keep lead additives in car fuel. Right now, we have a huge problem with a global climate disaster, with global mm-hmm. warming, and still oil companies are fighting for their right to keep producing oil so we can keep burning oil.
Yeah.
So right now, whenever we try to improve something in society, we very, very often have to fight huge corporate interests from very powerful people with a lot of money. What if it was the other way around? What if it was, companies, corporations driving positive change, if they were actively involved in creating solutions to all of these problems? That would be beyond amazing. And there are companies currently doing that, even very, very big and very successful ones.
Good dream. I hope it will be a reality.
We're getting there. We're getting there. If we can get there faster, it would be even better. And that's why it's so important that people like you are actively engaged in this mission. And there are so many of us out there working to make this happen.
And finally, one final question. If you would like to suggest one concrete step towards that vision we created a while ago, that you would suggest to companies, to leaders, to me, to everyone? What should we do as a first small step?
Look at the research.
Okay.
I mean, if go check out the research, because the research is amazing. So that will help you guide, that will help guide all your future steps, right? So that's why it's such a good first step.
Yes.
If you want to do one thing in your work life or in your company right now that can make things better, like today, positive feedback.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah. It's the most, it's one of the simplest things. It's incredibly powerful. It's very, very rare in most workplaces, but just giving people positive feedback for the good work they do or for the good qualities they have is incredibly powerful. There's so much research on how that can make a difference. It has so many positive effects. And I do it all the time. And it really, really works. So if you want to do just one thing, or, you know, you want to start with something very simple, try that. Give people positive feedback at work whenever you can. And I promise you, it's going to change everything.
Thank you so much, Alexander, for all the good advices, all the information you shared with us, all the resources you provided. It was great to have you as a guest on this episode.
Thank you for a great conversation. I really enjoyed this. It was so much fun.
Thank you so much. Maybe sometime after we can meet again.
I would love to.
Thank you. Okay, I would like to thank Alexander once again, and to all of you, our listeners. See you next time on our next episode. Goodbye for now.